You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And to that end, I don't want to assume anything, but in terms of the third base talk, the rotation talk, some of the other points of conversation today, it sounds like you guys are not done for the offseason. Is that safe to say that there are still things to do before you consider the roster quote unquote done to whatever extent it's ever done?
Yeah, I was going to say it's never done, but no, we're not done. We want to do some other things. Will everything align and those things happen? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I told Sandy that I'm happy with the team as is, but if we can make improvements, we'll make improvements. So we're definitely not done trying to make improvements to the team.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, February the 14th, 2021. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Well, this past week has been what I call the post-Trevor Bauer hot stove letdown. I think there was this idea that after the Mets didn't spend $40 million on Trevor Bauer, that all of a sudden that money was just going to funnel out to, as Joel Sherman has put it, the bottom of the free agent market, maybe the value, you know, overpay for the value-driven players, the players who are on the scrap heap, if you want to use that. That's more of my term. And you heard Zach Scott in the clip coming in saying they're not done, as he met with reporters on, Friday? And that hasn't happened, and I could sense that there's been some agitation with the fan base, so, you know, we'll get into that a little bit. And we're going to be spending Valentine's Day with a new guest, and that guest is going to be Jeff Ballone, JB, Mets Fixed. If you guys have not been subscribing to the Mets Fixed newsletter, you're missing out. It's a great newsletter, Monday to Friday. Not only does it have a great way of aggregating the top news, which could be very useful as you manage your life, you know, you can't spend every second of every day on Twitter, some of us. He also gives you some great opinion, and he's got a lot of experience as the co-founder of a site that I really enjoy as a Knicks fan, Knicks Film School. So Mets Fix, something that you should be checking out, and he's going to be joining me, and we're going to be spending Valentine's Day together. I'm glad to be spending Valentine's Day with you. And hopefully everybody's having a good Valentine's Day weekend and staying warm if you're in the Northeast. Lots of ice and snow. And obviously I could sense, like I said, some agitation in the Mets fan base. For the first time in a long time, I actually listened to WFAN on Saturday morning. Evan Roberts was doing a show. And boy, some of the calls, I got to tell you. And a lot of bad GMs in the WFAN caller base. But you can see that there's some panic. Now, before I get into, I think, what I'm going to give you, the most balanced perspective on the Mets not making moves to date. And I talked with JB of Mets Fix earlier in the day, and I don't really think Mike Montgomery and Tommy Hunter with some minor league signings earlier in the afternoon really change a lot of what's going on. But there was some appetizers for the week, so some string beans and some sauce and some potatoes. It wasn't a lot of meat, but there was some appetizers. Surprising move. I thought Jonathan Villar was a surprising move, an interesting move. Speed, power, probably not going to annoy you as much as a super sub. I know that in reading up on him, he was the kind of guy that could lose focus and make some careless errors. It was an Orioles blog. Playing for a bad team, you'll see that happen. So hopefully with a good team, that won't be the case. It allows you to put Guillerme at third a little bit when he could sub in for J.D. Davis. Villar could play, it looks like, multiple positions. I don't know how good he is at. I know he could play up the middle, and I know he tried his hand in the outfield. But third base is a whole different ball game, so I guess we'll see how he can play that. But he's more of an up-the-middle guy, shortstop, of course. And I think with no DH, it looks like that's going to be the case here in 2021. A guy like that, especially with double switching out, could be very valuable. You're going to need, especially if you're carrying 13 pitchers, you're only going to, well, you're going to have five guys on the bench potentially. I don't think you could go. Could you go more than 13? The rules change so much. I have to look that up. But let's say you go 14 pitchers, then you get four-man bench. Five-man bench, not bad, because you have the second catcher, which makes it really a four-man bench. But anyway, I'm getting out away from the point. Guy with versatility is big when you're playing in the non-DH league with the double switches and all of that. And surprisingly, I looked at some advanced metrics. He was like the 40th best player in all of baseball from win shares. It's amazing. Trey Mancini was talking to Jim Duquette, spoke very highly of him. There's a star in the game that speaks highly of someone. So, you know, there's a guy that potentially could have an impact, and it strengthens the Mets bench, which they needed. Now, the other move was Albert Amora. I would have went with Jake Marisnyk as the right-handed caddy for Brandon Nimmo. I like Marisnyk, had more pop. I thought he was better defensively. I mean, I haven't seen Almora every day, but I think Marisnyk is a guy known for his glove. Amora, I think what the Mets are looking at here is there's a guy that was a top 10 pick, has underperformed. There's obviously talent in there. Can this front office look at the undervalued asset group and put him in that, and then somehow through coaching or somehow he's working on something, perhaps on his own, that all of a sudden, a la Justin Turner, comes to the forefront, and now the Mets look like geniuses. Who knows? He's an automatic out in a lot of ways if he plays every day, so if the Mets lineup has no DH, and again, it looks like that's the case, the bottom is going to look thinner. You're going to have the pitcher, you're going to have Almora. You know, if McCann needs a day off and you're going to have Thomas Nito, who I know is trying to improve offensively, you're looking at a, you know, two-thirds lineup. So it changes. No DH changes a lot. Guys like this, when they play extended time, as a defensive replacement, no problem, but you know where I'm going. Now, the interesting move of the week is the Khalil Lee move from Kansas City. So the Mets get involved in this Andrew Benintendi trade, and they vulture, basically, a top prospect, a top 10 prospect, for basically Josh Winkowski, the third of the three pitchers that they got from the Blue Jays for Steven Matz, who, from what I've been told, might be the one with the least amount of upside. Not saying he's bad. And a player to be named later. Interestingly, we'll see what the Red Sox wind up getting as the second prospect. But Khalil Lee's the typical guy that I like to criticize because they label him a 5-2 player, and usually these athletic, toolsy guys never produce. Now, Zach Scott's comments on Friday were very interesting because when I first heard the name Khalil Lee and I heard about the five tools and I heard about the athleticism, I said, watch, I'm going to go and I'm going to see no results in the minor league bio. No results on Baseball Reference. Well, that's not true. He's had some decent numbers. He's produced. He's hit for power. He certainly could steal bases. The scouting reports are that he's still a work in progress, especially instinctually in the outfield. But Zach Scott said that they like his athleticism, but they like a lot about his performance. And that is so key. Because a lot of times you get into these guys and you hear about how much, you know, tools they have and, you know, they're on the top of the whatever prospect list, but they never get any results. So if the Mets are collecting assets here, I'm fine with that. Is that leading to something bigger down the road? Perhaps. Maybe he's got something that we don't know. They like him a lot. And, you know, Nimmo's out 2 weeks. We're all worried about Almora. Well, guess what? Khalil Lee could step in. Now, he's lefty, which doesn't change, you know, the balance problem you may have in some cases with the Mets lineup. But we'll see. So you can't go crazy. Maybe you flip this guy down the road. You're never going to argue with giving up assets. Now, it all goes back to where they traded Steven Matz for assets. But and then on the flip side, you really could use Matt's the pitcher, because you're starting to see now that it's going to be Jakey Odorizzi, Taiwan Walker, or the Mets are going to go straight scrap heap, or going to go with Peterson, Lucchese, Yamamoto, and you know, who knows if Mike Montgomery, who they just signed, could go into the rotation. But, you know, as it is, you really got to hope that when you gave up Matt's, these assets lead to either producing on the 40-man roster or helping you gain something bigger down the road, because that's really what the Khalil Lee trade to me plays into. And also with Steven Matz, you thought, you know, you were freeing up payroll, and I think you were for Trevor Bauer. But, you know, more importantly, it looks like they needed assets. They needed to basically lengthen the 40-man roster and what have you. Now, the real thing I think that's on everybody's mind and what's really driving everybody nuts here, the fan base, is the fact that, again, you saw Justin Turner off the board. Mets, you know, missed out. James Paxton looks like the Mets missed out. Arrieta, who I liked, got a little expensive. The Mets pass. This goes back to not signing any of the top three free agents. No Springer. No Bauer. Pass on Real Muto and go for James McCann. Brad Hand didn't make it into the, you know, looked like they had him. When it got deep into the negotiation, Mets backed out. Rich Hill signed a very reasonable deal for a couple million bucks. Mets weren't going to go that route. So no Japanese imports either. So now the fans are freaking out. Is this Wilpon part 2.0? And I got to, like, slow everybody down. The PTSD is, like, out of control. Mets have made some moves this offseason, and I don't think they're done. And you heard Zach Scott say they're not done. But I keep going back to the word opportunistic, because that's what the Mets are going to try to be. And I think right now they're looking to see who's going to fall to those minor league deals, and is there anybody they could bring in really inexpensive, because the musical chairs, the season's starting. Pitchers and catchers are here. Players are going to start to get some anxiety. Those that are not Jackie Bradley Jr., who are represented by Boris, Boris is very comfortable and has a history of bringing guys into the beginning of the year and that working out well, or late in spring training working out well. Kyle Loesch is a name you might remember. Other than that, there's some of these other guys, the Tommy Hunters, the Montgomerys of the world, they're going to start to drop, and they're going to start to say, all right, get me something. They're going to tell their agent. Jay Bruce signed a minor league deal with the Yankees. So those guys are going to be there, and the Mets are going to be able to get some of those guys. They already did. They did that earlier today. But Alderson had a quote at the beginning of the offseason, and I go back again to it, is that discipline at the top of the financial market is just as important as having it when you have a budget, or in the case of when he worked for the Wilpons, a moving budget that could move up, could move down, uncertainty every day on the job. You don't want to make a move just because you have the money to spend to blow everybody away for James Paxton and then have some buyer's remorse because a better deal comes down the road. I don't think this is a money thing. The Mets were about to pluck down $40 million for Bauer a week ago or so. Then all of a sudden broke. Nothing changed. I don't want to hear about GameStop. Nothing changed. I think they're very in tune about value. Look, they've got a guy in Zach Scott who comes from an analytics background. Mets are kind of like that team now. I mean, Porter had a scouting background and had some of that, but Zach Scott's next level. Alderson has always been about value. Alderson has always been methodical. Now, I said at the beginning of the offseason, he may have been a little antiquated. And you have this chaotic front office right now. I'm repeating myself from prior podcasts, but it really starts to crystallize, I hope, for everybody that I know what I'm talking about here. This is a difficult task they're undertaking. Historically difficult. New owner in November, GM, no GM, Alderson's the GM, he's not. Zach Scott said, I mean, this is a lot. This is a lot of on-the-fly planning to try to compete now, build the foundation, and move forward. So I think that's probably playing into some of this. But also remember, so there's, you know, I'm not ready to panic because I know the money's there and they have a good foundation. We'll talk about this with JB over at Mets Fix in a few. Pakoda Baseball Baseball Prospectus projections have the Mets at 95 wins. I've never seen the Mets get that much love from one of those analytics-based publications. Now, I think that's a little bit high, maybe a little bit rosy, but, you know, the Mets right now are good. I think they have some holes. I think there's some issues. Seth Lugo being out, huge first blow, no doubt about it. And he's had arm issues, and I guess we were waiting for the day where they would crop up again because he never really got the Tommy John surgery. So a couple more of those and that 95 win rosiness may go away. But the Mets have flexibility to be able to go out and get somebody, and money shouldn't hold them back. Now, the real question is, are they being too clever by the half playing the value game? If you're taking a step back here because you're still trying to figure out if you could get Chris Bryant or Matt Chapman for third base, or a deal that I really think if they could get these guys without giving up Francisco Alvarez, their top catching prospect, one of their top prospects, I think that'd be very difficult to give him up. I think that will come back to bite you down the road. But Suarez and Gray, Eugenio Suarez and Sonny Gray over in Cincinnati, that would controllable guys, third baseman who hits for power, gets on base, good defensively, a guy that could be, you know, middle of the rotation. I know he had some issues, Gray, in with the Yankees, and Brian Cashman said some things about pitching in New York. But other than that one season, his first season in New York, maybe the wins and losses weren't great, but his numbers weren't bad. He wasn't big in the postseason. The Mets aren't relying on him to be an ace. That's not what they need out of him. So, I mean, they'd have to do their due diligence, but maybe a trade like that, fine, you know, then take a step back. But if you're just trying to win the value game, that's fantasy baseball nonsense. And if they lose because they're doing that, then they're going to get killed. Remember, Steve Cohen is from he's a trader. They like winning with numbers. They like winning markets. It's a game. That could be some of what's going on. I hope not. I hope they're not too clever by a half. I don't think they are. My gut says no. But the behaviors are there. Alderson has always been methodical. You guys have 10 years of Alderson to see what he's about. Zach Scott's a new GM, but he comes from that background of analytics and value equation. And sometimes that gets frustrating. So you don't have much left. The minor league deals, you saw them starting to come. Once Jay Bruce took one, I said, more are going to come. And then you saw Montgomery and Hunter, and maybe by the time this podcast publishes, there's something else. Now, remember one thing. There's one thing which may be hanging over their head, and they threw it to the wind for Bauer, not so much for George Springer. They backed out when it got a little expensive. But you have DeGrom opt-out coming up. Marcus Stroman and Syndergaard are going to be free agents. Conforto's a free agent. Lindor needs an extension. You probably have about $120 million worth of payroll that you have to figure out for those guys as early as, well, not all of them next year. DeGrom, maybe 2 years, but most of it next year. And, you know, DeGrom is going to get $40 million, and maybe you never know how the market goes with pitching. When Stroman and Syndergaard are out there, you know, all of a sudden, you know, maybe that $25 million a year they get gets higher for a desperate team. So my point here is this. There's a lot of reasons to be okay with how the Mets have gone about their methodical offseason. It's justified based on the chaos. It's justified based on future expenditures. They made a big deal. They made a big deal. Don't take that away from them. But I understand your trepidation. And I don't have as much PTSD as some of you do. But I have a little bit of issues with Alderson and his methodical ways. I don't think he's a beloved guy that, like a Jared Porter, could pick up the phone and pretty much talk to anybody. Maybe Zach Scott's that guy. From what I understand, and it was out there in the media, Khalil Lee trade was a relationship trade. It happened to kind of something the Mets stumbled into because they know these guys. How in touch is Alderson? He's been out of the game for 3 years. Now, he's not going to be the GM of the baseball guy forever. We know that. It's a transitional thing. But every year that goes by that you lose an opportunity to win is another year that your players get older. Not just DeGrom, but Alonzo, McNeil. You have an opportunity. You never want to miss an opportunity to try to compete and win. The Dodgers are tough. The Dodgers are clear-cut the best team in the National League, probably all of baseball. It's going to be tough to beat them in a 7-game series. Mets lost their first game to the Dodgers last week when they lost Trevor Bauer to them. So, you know, Pecota likes the Mets for 95 wins. I'm not sure Mets fans love the Mets yet. And I know there's some concern, but my message to you is, let's take a step back. There's reason to be alarmed and to look under the hood and say, what is going on there? There's justification for what's going on there. I outline that. But I'm not ready to panic. But I'm not ready to absolve them either. You went from a riverboat gambler in Brody Van Wagenen to now Alderson. So maybe that's, you know, the other extreme. And it's funny, nobody liked when Brody was shooting from the hip. Now they want Sandy maybe to shoot a little bit from the hip. So it goes to show you, you never really could win in this town. All right, let's take a quick break. When I return, JB, Jeffrey Ballone, Mets Fix, the Metropolitan Newsletter. Great publication. While we're in the break, go out, go to at Mets Fix on Twitter, sign up for the Metropolitan Newsletter. Trust me, you won't regret it. All right, JB, Jeff Ballone, and Mets Fix. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Doc Gooden's first 2 years in the big leagues were some of the best in the history of baseball. How did that impact him going forward? He discussed this with me on the Talking Mets podcast.
You know, normally you have those type of years, maybe like year five, year six, once you get like 28, 29 years old. Mine happened in 1920, my first 2 years. I remember a game in 86 where I pitched a shutout, but I only had three strikeouts. The first question was, what happened? You only had three strikeouts. And, you know, you'll say the political correct words. You'll say, oh, I'm not worrying about that. I just want to win. It's for the team. But inside, now, that hit a nerve where you feel like my next start, I got to pitch nine innings. I got to pitch a shutout. I got to get 10 strikeouts. And I lost some fun that I was having in game because of that, because of expectation, where it became like the media expectation, the fan expectation. Then it became my expectation, what I felt that anything I did, like I couldn't match 85 no matter what I did. But in my mind, if I didn't get the 10 strikeouts or whatever, it wasn't the same. It wasn't just a win. And I wasn't having as much fun as I should have had. And that's one of the things I regret looking back at my career now, where I allowed things, what, you know, whether it's the media, the fans, or myself after that point, getting into my own head, allowing that me to lose the fun, because it should be a privilege playing Major League Baseball. And you're still winning games. You're still pitching great. Obviously, it's not 85, but unfortunately, I had my career year, my second year, or you say my first year, and you're never going to match that again.
Listen to this and more at www.talkingmetspodcast.com. We're back, and joining me, Jeff Ballone, JB, Mets Fix. You guys probably know about it, the Metropolitan Monday through Friday newsletter. Also one of the founders of Knicks Film School. So if you're a Knicks fan, you guys know Jeff. And JB, welcome to the program. And what I would say for this week after the Trevor Bauer weekend of a week ago, it's like this big anticipation of a party. It doesn't happen. All the air came out of the balloon, and there was some little appetizers thrown to Mets fans this week. But you get the sense after some of the signings this weekend, James Paxton, Justin Turner, you know, they get a little antsy. And I'm like, just calm down, guys, just calm down. So how are you? And, you know, give me a little idea of the post-Trevor Bauer appetizers that we all had a chance to digest this week in Metsville.
Yeah. No, and excited to be on the show. Actually, I was thinking about it. I've probably done 1,000 Knicks podcasts. You've become my first official Mets one. Look at that. So ceremonious. But no, you know, it's funny with Trevor Bauer. I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, talk about a free agent signing made for 2021. You know, it had everything that, you know, you could possibly want these days packed into, you know, the buildup on social media and obviously the different things about people, you know, how they view his character and whether they want him or don't want him. So coming out of all that, and it was kind of exhaustive to me, like going through that whole process. And then like now what they do, I mean, I think Mets fans, all of us were just confused. Like you're about to spend $40 million on this guy. And I get like, if it's a certain player, you're willing to spend more than others, but suddenly now you're sitting here with like, you know, close to around $30 million of payroll under the luxury tax. And it's like, we're, you know, you're seeing these rumors, like they don't want to even take a chance on like a starter that's not even making that much money. So that's kind of, I guess, a strange spot we're in, where I'm almost wondering, are they working on something else bigger? Because it just seems odd that we go from Trevor Bauer, they're going to go over the luxury tax, to, yeah, James Paxton, like if we won't pay an extra $500,000 to get him.
And it's interesting because I was saying about this in the open. There's a couple of ways you could look at it. Yes, Zach Scott was on the call with the reporters on Friday claiming they are still in the works. And they seem to be an aggressive team. Even when they've been out on guys, I don't think it's because they were so far out. I mean, you try to spend, you didn't lose that. You were ready to spend $40 million, like you said. I think it's the value equation. So are they playing too cute by a half with the value equation? Think back to Alderson's comments with the reporters back in November. just because you're at the top of the financial food chain now, discipline is as important as it always has been. Because even if that big move isn't to be made now, whether it's Suarez, Sonny Gray, Chapman, Chris Bryant, whatever, there's all sorts of rumors out there. They may not be out there today. It may be there down the road. And it's not just about, I think, the luxury tax and money, because I know everybody looks at the Dodgers, but do you want to sign $10 million to James Paxton and then an opportunity arises a week from now? And maybe in your mind, was James Paxton really, for 13, 15 starts, injury history, worth that kind of money when in a couple of weeks, a month, whatever, you know, somebody else is out there? Or are they getting too cute because now they've got a very analytically driven front office? It could go many different ways. And I think that's where the frustration is, because you still have that PTSD from the Wilpon ownership where everybody's saying they're being frugal. I don't think it's frugal, but I do worry that there's a certain level of competence that sometimes you like to win the game of the offseason. And that doesn't always mean you're making the right decision.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, we saw it with James McCann, and I wasn't in love with that signing. I'm hoping I'm wrong about it. But the point is, to me, it's a question of, are they identifying players that they like in a smart way? And then therefore, these other ones that maybe the fans want that they pass on, it's not so much like they're missing on them or things like that. It's more, they just don't, they don't like Paxton. He's lost velocity on his fastball. There's injury concerns. There's legitimate reasons not to like him. Or is it this kind of case of, because of the front office changeover, there isn't really this clear plan and there has been some pivots? And I think that to me is really the interesting question. I don't mind if they're sitting out because they have a plan of who they want to go get, but it's just the way it's unfolded, it almost feels like they've sort of changed course a couple times.
That's, you know, and that's a very good point. And I've said that multiple times this offseason. This is very historically significant what they're trying to do. New owner, November 1st. They couldn't do anything before the closing. You can't move into the house before you own it. It's the same concept. And I don't think everybody understood that. Now, could they have started to conceptualize in their head? I think everybody may have done that, but it's not your typical offseason planning where right after the season ends, you get your group together. You still had to build a GM. Sandy was going to be the GM. Then he wasn't. They bring Porter in. They fire Porter. Zach Scott goes from number two to Dr. Evil over there, you know, and it's chaotic. That doesn't mean you can't win. And they're trying to win. If they were the Pirates, okay, you know what? Does it matter? Let's just focus on the small ground level stuff. Like what Bill James said, the top level news stuff. We don't need that, but they need that. So if they can pull off a winning season and a competitive season, I think they're going to go back and talk about this. Even though you and I are not in the room, there has to be a certain level of fly by the seat of your pants that is out of character for the owner, Sandy Alderson, and probably anybody they brought in. But it's just, it's the life they lived. They couldn't close before November 1st, which I think is silly, but that's Major League Baseball as well when you think about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's it. They haven't had time to build the new processes they want to use to make decisions. They're hiring new people in their analytics department or along the front office. So I think all that matters. Just one last point on the luxury taxes. To me, the reason it matters and still talking about that is because of, and you can tell I'm an economist, my background here, but it's opportunity cost.
Sure.
So meaning it matters, you know, we're talking, I do Knicks stuff. Like it matters in the NBA when you have a hard salary cap that if you sign a player that you misvalue, that impacts your future roster decisions. In baseball, it does only because there's this sort of artificial idea by several owners that they're not going to spend above that tax, right? So I guess to me, that's the only part that I'm just still not sure about with Cohen, is how much does he truly care about that luxury tax? And if it's not as big of a deal, then you actually can take a chance on one of these starters, even if you don't think the contract is a great value. If they give you some amount of innings instead of some replacement level guy from the minors, it might be worth it to you. So that's the only thing I think is a little different in a conversation in baseball than it would be, like I said, like in a hard cap league.
But to look at this other thing I thought of, and I know that fans don't want to hear this. They just want to hear spend, spend, spend. They're going to the other extreme. But you have a DeGrom opt-out coming out. He's going to probably make $35, $40 million. He's going to opt out. He didn't change agents to keep the contract. Stroman and Syndergaard, if you want to re-sign them, that could be $50 million combined.
Mm-hmm.
20 to 25 million in that ballpark. Lindor's going to be 30 to 35 million. Everybody laughed when I said, look at the Bryce Harper contract. Look at Michael Conforto. Look at the numbers. I know he wasn't on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Boris is going to say, I got Harper this. Maybe you don't want to give him a billion years, Michael Conforto. But average annual value of $26 million, if that's Bryce Harper, Michael Conforto is going to be in that. Mm-hmm. You're looking at about $120 million that you will have to decide on very quickly, as early as next offseason, with a new CBA, with a whole bunch of other garbage going on. So this could also be playing into it. Now, with Bauer, I understood. Throw the $40 million. I was ready to lose Stroman and potentially Syndergaard for Bauer, because the downside was you still have two aces. You could build the team. Now it's a little different. You know, your pitching could be thin. You don't know Matthew Allen's progression. You don't know Lucchese. You don't know Peterson. It could get very tricky. So when you look at an Odorizzi on a three-year deal, if that's what he gets, you might be saying now, I'm giving Odorizzi the money, and that means then he's here next year, and I'm letting Stroman or Syndergaard walk. I'm not ready to do that. So I think all those other things in play, maybe it's not frugality. It's, well, guys, we got to prepare for next year too. We can't just play for 2021.
Yeah, no, there's no way around it. They have a ton of money. I mean, you know, it seems like with Lindor, they're going to, that's the extension I think people expect more than Conforto, you know, with how Boris will push that to the end. But, you know, you're talking probably over $300 million just on him. And then you just mentioned everyone in the pitching staff. So, no, I agree. I thought with Bauer, it was sort of a play towards 2022, because even if you look ahead at the free agents, there's a lot of big names, Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, but it's older guys and guys that, you know, is Kershaw really going to leave LA? And I actually think Kershaw's going to be interesting to watch. He's seeing Bauer get all this money, and he's going to be like, well, wait a minute here. Like, I'm Clayton Kershaw. But the point is that the options next winter, you have to consider that too. And I thought that's what they were doing a little bit with Bauer, where they say, if we can get him on a short-term deal and then we don't have to sign like a Lance Lynn next year because for some reason we're caught in a situation where there's no one else to sign, we rather have Bauer on the back end of that deal than someone like that on a long-term deal.
When you start to look at the moves from last week, I don't have a problem with any of them. Jonathan Villar, interesting move. You know, probably a guy that is going to get more at-bats than we think. If you're playing multiple positions, you're going to get 300 at-bats. Gives McNeil some flexibility. And maybe, you know what, if there's an injury, he's not a big downgrade. He was, I didn't realize Fangraphs had him as a top 40 player in 2019. He had a really good 2019. Mm-hmm. Bad team, kind of different when you're playing in Baltimore. But anyway, that is what it is. I wasn't crazy about Almora. I liked Marisnik, but I'm not going to cry about it. You know, he's a big downgrade with Nimmo's out. But then you have the real interesting one, which is the prospect, which is Khalil Lee. And what I liked what Zach Scott said is that it's great to be toolsy, but there's got to be performance. How many, JB, how many prospects do we hear are top five and they have all these tools? And then I go to Baseball Reference and I'm like, huh? Yeah, and I hear every year, well, you got to perform. Now he's performed and maybe he needs to learn the instincts of defense and the outfield. There's some things that they throw out there. Didn't play well in Winter League. Neither did Keith Hernandez when he was a young player. He's interesting, which could beg the question, is he something more than we think? Maybe we're underrating him, or is he part of a bigger plan that everyone seems to think something big is in the offering? So give me kind of what you thought of last week's moves and maybe some of the names you guys over at the Mets Fix are looking at to round out this roster, because they're going to sign somebody.
It's just going to be
a value-driven sign.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that without a doubt, their bench is better, right? And, you know, that's important. I think with the Mets, you know, they're built, I always joke, they're kind of built like a fantasy team where defense doesn't matter. When you look at the lineup, I mean, it's incredible, like how deep this lineup is. I mean, J.D. Davis, for as much as he gets, you know, sort of looked down upon, it's like the guy.
It's amazing to me. It's amazing to me how people don't like him.
Yeah. Like his offensive production is, you know, he definitely adds value there. All right. So, you know, I think I was a little surprised. I thought they were going to get someone who is like a clear third base utility defensive option, because then you could split up, you know, some of your innings there on defense. And, you know, they didn't go that route. But no, I was fine with the moves in terms of, you know, the prospect from the Royals. And now I sound like Mike Francesa saying that instead of Khalil Lee.
Khalil Lee.
Right? When you don't think of the name right away.
The Kansas City kid. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Just say that.
That's all you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. No, there seems to be promise. You know, I guess, you know, he's had a high strikeout rate. And I guess he worked on that at the alternate site. That was something, by the way, I found interesting, too. We know scouts had limited access to these sites, you know, with COVID. The Red Sox, with the players to be named later, they came out and said, the reason we want a player to be named later is we couldn't scout anyone. And right. Yet, you know, with the Mets, they took a player who, yeah, he has some pedigree, so they know something. But you didn't get a great view of last year. So you do wonder, like, how that kind of plays into it. But no, I think when you say, well, what's going to happen? I think you're going to see a depth pitching signing, because for all the talk about Bauer, the biggest thing people overlook is innings. The guy pitches innings. So you took Matz, who I know he had his injury issues in parts of his career, but you took a guy who made a lot of starts. You take Bauer that you missed on. And it's like, you can't, you know, you need someone to pitch innings over a full 162 game season.
Absolutely.
So I think they need some more depth there. You know, Yamamoto and Lucchesi, like, I think they're good options because they have flexibility. They can be in the minors and come up. But, and you hope one of them pops, but I still think they're more of like spot starter type ideally than they would be like eating a large percentage of your innings. So I think someone like an Odorizzi, which, I mean, I don't know. Hefner, the pitching coach, he obviously knows him from Minnesota. The fact the Mets haven't been seemingly aggressive with him makes you wonder, is Hefner knows something because he knows him well? But someone like that they need. And then, yeah, I think a bigger move's coming. I really do. I just do not see, you know, we don't know a lot about Steve Cohen as an owner, but I just don't see him in his first year being like, yeah, we're going to be well under the tech. Like, actually, I have to look at the exact number, but I think right now the Mets payroll would be less than last year. And it's like,
interesting.
So, it's so strange to think they would go into the year with a lower payroll. And, you know, again, there's some complications to that. They got Lindor and he's on a lower AAV.
They had a lot of dead money last year too. Yeah, remember going in, you had Cespedes, which was potential dead money.
Right.
David Wright was still on there. So and there's a reallocation of some of that money. But you're right. I mean, the interesting thing is with Odorizzi, is a multi-year deal for a pitcher a problem for the Mets if it's not the ilk of Bauer because of these other guys? Right. I mean, that's really the question. So you got Taijuan Walker and you got Odorizzi, who are your impact guys. After that, do you go Cole Hamels? I mean, Jay Bruce just signed a minor league deal. One of the things that I think they will eventually benefit from, because they can play that game, is there's going to be a number of veterans that are going to have to take minor league deals. Jay Bruce didn't want a minor league deal. And in normal times, he would have had some team give him a major league one-year deal somewhere. You hear agents say 8 to 10 teams are spending money. That might be generous. So there's going to be, and I hope that that's not all they're waiting for, but that to me, if they don't go Walker or Odorizzi, what's left? And then you're relying on Lucchesi and Peterson. And that's where the match trade, yes, I know they got pieces and they got interesting pieces, but and that's probably needed a change of scenery. But he was a decent pitcher for a number five, for a number four. And with Carrasco now and Stroman back, you didn't need him to be number two. He was miscast. You know, Syndergaard coming back. So you may actually be looking for Steven Matz right now in that type of player. And that's the best you're going to get, which is interesting when it's all said. Yeah,
well, and the fact, again, obviously the order of these things matter. And if they had signed Bauer, you know, the plan all works, but that, you know, you're looking at some of these moves where they got rid of Matz, right? And they got rid and they just designated Brad Brock there for assignment when $2 million they're going to eat. So you're kind of like, well, what are they like? It just would seem odd to make those moves unless you had like a real clear plan of who's going to replace them. I think Trevor Rosenthal in the bullpen is another one that a lot of people like. He's a righty, but he can get lefties out. So like a move like that makes sense, but it just seems like there's just some oddity. And again, I get it if it was all about signing Bauer and then they just missed, but it seems like to go all in on a guy like that, where you make all these other moves, maybe you do a lower bid to Springer than, you know, you should have, all because you thought you were going to sign Bauer when you knew Bauer was no guarantee when he has that connection to the Dodgers. I don't know. It just, that's what's a little odd to me where, you know, I'm expecting like the other shoe to drop here.
That's right. The PTSD of old Mets Wilpon ownership. It's going to take some time to get out of that. JB, Jeff Blown, Mets Fix joining me here. I'll give you the name that you guys over at Mets Fix, and a guy I liked that I think it may be better than Rosenthal is Yusmeiro Petit, the old Carlos Delgado trade, come back full circle. Yep. Good numbers, sneaky good numbers, has been around a long time. I think he can be as close to Lugo. Maybe he can't go multiple innings like Lugo, but he can put the workload in. Maybe that's the guy, you know, and I actually, in a way, would prefer him over Rosenthal. Rosenthal, to me, again, had a very bad 19 coming back from injury, and there's so many walks in that bullpen. It got better with May and Loop, but Betances, Familia, Diaz. The issue with the Mets bullpen is not strikeouts and missed bats. It's that you have to miss so many bats because there's so many runners on, and then all it takes is one hit. You walk two guys, all it takes is one bleeder, and your inning blows up. So that's a guy, and that's the kind of pitcher I'd like them to go for. They're putting a lot of stock in McWilliams that they signed off the scrap heap. And maybe they know something we don't. But you brought up this name this morning over at MetsFix. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think, and again, this is where I'm not sure yet with this front office where it's almost like you're afraid to say like these value finds, you know, like Petit, because you're again, like the PTSD, it's almost like you're suggesting they're going cheap. Like when you say value, it's cheap. It's more to me of if you put money aside and you just said, you know, who makes sense, who fits in the bullpen. And to your point, you don't need all the same arms. Like sometimes you want to build a bullpen that works together as a unit where you're showing different looks. And I think that's another thing to consider. So that's why, you know, I think when all of us are just pulling up fan graphs and we're looking at the stats, you can't always do that. I think you have to sometimes consider, does this pitcher offer us something a little bit different than someone else we come out of a bullpen, a different look? And that's how you can build an effective group. I thought with Aaron Loop, to me, that was kind of in that vein. He has, you know, a different angle as a left-hander. So it was one thing they needed a left-hander, but it's another, he has a different arm angle. And it's just saying like, you need to have different looks that when you're playing, especially the way the inbound schedule is, you're playing the Braves 18 times, you know, that is important. So that's, you know, that's why I think that's another name to look at. But, you know, like I said, it's not an impressive list right now you're going through. And the Mets, they said at the beginning of the offseason, and smartly, that they need to build some depth in their farm system. So they didn't want to use that capital to improve the team. But I think what we've seen is the trade market has just been more fruitful. And that's why it's really hard as fans, because we don't really know other than what's reported. And a lot of times that's just kind of made up stuff of like, who's really available. And I just do wonder when they're calling around, you know, are there some options maybe we don't know as much about that are better than some of these other ones? So I always feel like that when I say the unknown, it's not so much like, oh, you know, the Mets are, they don't know what they're doing and you're just going to do some random trade. I think it's more they're evaluating both sides of it and you can't overlook that aspect.
Absolutely. Out of all the rumored big deals, the Chapman stuff, that would be great. That's expensive. I can't see them getting Chapman to play. It'd be great third base. I love JD Davis, but head out on that one. Chris Bryant and Hendricks, another situation which I'm doubtful. You're also going to lose Chris Bryant if he's a one-year deal, because how are you going to sign? You know, maybe it's a hedge your bet for Conforto. Who knows? But the Suarez-Gray-Cincinnati situation is interesting because they're both controlled for a few years because they have contracts. Together, they make, I think, about $25 million in that range. Suarez, to me, is an upgrade at third base with J.D. Davis. I'd be okay with losing J.D. Davis for him. Now, Sonny Gray is interesting because he's a good pitcher and he fits what you and I are looking for. Had a bad rep with the Yankees. Brian Cashman said he's not a New York guy. But other than that 1 year, his first year in New York wasn't horrible. Advanced metrics are pretty decent. He had a bad second year. And I'm sure the due diligence. Look, Kenny Rogers came back. Everybody laughs. But without Kenny Rogers, the Mets don't make the playoffs in 1999. So just remember that. That's the one deal. And I don't know what the Reds would want. I certainly wouldn't give up the catching prospect Alvarez. That to me would hurt you. That would be, I think a guy like that would hurt you more than Kelnick down the road. So yeah, if you could keep one of those big prospects out, big if, that's where I would go. And I don't know if JD Davis could headline that, but I certainly think you'd have to be in a deal like that.
Yeah, no, that's it. Because when you're talking about going after cost control guys, it's less of a money thing, right? So the idea is, you know, the Mets can use their newfound financial power to say, you know, like we've seen with the Nolan Arenado trade and the Francisco Lindor trade and Carrasco, it's saying we're going to take these contracts and then that way we don't have to give up a lot in prospects. You know, to me, like someone like a Chapman, they're not at that point in time yet where they're ready to, you know, where they're worried about the contract amount. So that's why you're going to have to give up more. You know, and then the other thing too, is I think you have to be creative. Like Dom Smith is one that I think the fan base, we all like him, but I think you have to even look at other areas like that and say to yourself, is this a guy who we think has enough value that by moving him, especially without the DH this year, you then open up other opportunities, right? So to me, it's like, it's easy to just look at the roster now and say like, okay, well, let's just upgrade on JD Davis. I think there's, it's really about how the team feels the future. To me, Dom Smith's a key one, because how you feel his future is kind of dictates how you're going to build out this team. Whether you say, okay, he's going to be the first baseman with Alonso DHing once the DH comes back, and that's just how it's going to be. Or is he the one you look to gain some value in another area? And then that also sort of helps your outfield situation. Not a lot of people have talked about that because I think a lot of people like Dom Smith, but I think you have to kind of think outside the box, you know, with the situation or in with the roster.
The other guy that falls into the JD Davis, and what's interesting, let's just one more point on JD Davis. Everyone loves Justin Turner, and Justin Turner is an elite offensive player, top yep. third offensive player, but he's got a bad knee, microfracture surgery. That's serious stuff. Ended Daniel Murphy's career. And defensively, he hasn't been good for a while. JD Davis' potential with the bat, if you look at his numbers the second half of 2019, he's mm-hmm. right up there. He was elite in the second, let's say July 1st, maybe not the exact second half, but you get the point. Yeah. I was surprised that everyone's, Justin Turner's there. Justin Turner's clearly wanted to play in LA. He's a Southern California yeah. guy. You have JD Davis, who defensively is the same. So you can't make the defense argument there. And then you've got Brandon Nimmo. And I don't listen to talk radio all that much because it drives me bananas, because I want to be there to rebuttal some of the, but I got people listening yesterday, driving for about 20 minutes in the car. I'm listening to the people waxing poetic about Jackie Bradley Jr. Give him a 5-year deal. You know, you need that defense. I'm like, guys, you have an elite run creator. I know not everybody looks at Fangraphs. I know a lot of everybody looks at those numbers, but when Brandon Nimmo is healthy, and I know the neck, that's a serious injury, the herniated mm-hmm. discs. I know a little bit about that. So you might have to have a hedge your bet or rest him a little bit, but that he is elite when he's on the field. And I don't think people realize that. And I talked to a scout who said, if you position him well, and he watched him play in Colorado, not an easy outfield. So he's not horrible. Right. Now, I know we see him drop a fly ball, and sometimes he runs into the wall, and he's goofy out there with a smile. Yeah. But I like him, and I'm not ready, whether it was Starling Marte or Jackie. Like, I can't take the names. I'm like, you have to have a clear-cut, better combination of offense-defense. And I don't think Jackie Bradley Jr. is that. I think you could get away with a defensive replacement, and you have that in Elmore. So interesting on that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And the numbers with Jackie Bradley Jr., and we'll see what he actually gets now, the way the market is. But to me,
and he is worth crazy. $20 million. If you base some of the advanced metrics, there is a case for that. I'm sure Boris is not using Fangraphs, but there's been times where he's been worth that, which I didn't think of that. And that's what he's asking. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just, I mean, the point that you're, you know, and again, everyone gets on like using WAR, and I get it, right? Like who wants to talk all these advanced metrics? But it is answering a fundamental question you ask if you don't frame it in terms of WAR. And that is Nimmo's offense good enough to overcome his defensive deficiencies? And then would Jackie Bradley Jr. give you such an increase on defense that it makes up for his shortfalls on offense? And I think in the answers and the metrics is no. I mean, Nimmo is projected WAR playing center field, where they're accounting for his bad defense, is right. higher than Jackie Bradley Jr.
So, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
You know, so to me, that's the point that I think people need to realize, is that you're then moving him over to left. And if you don't have the DH, you're losing Dom Smith. And so to me, when I say, you know, if you were to do something with Dom Smith, it's just simply saying like George Springer, if your worry with Springer was, and I don't know what it was kind of strange how that negotiation went, but if the worry was like, you know, how is everyone else going to fit? It's like, well, for a George Springer, you make it work. For Jackie Bradley Jr., you don't. To me, I do not see, there's just not enough added value of him on defense to make up for what he does offensively, which is a well below average hitter.
As we wrap up here, and I have Jeffrey Ballone, JB, Mets Fix. You guys might remember him from Knicks Film School. I will get one Knicks question in with you. I don't want to leave you because you got to know. And the fans are going to go, I'm going to get all the comments. You know, I don't want to hear it. Anytime you go outside the Mets on this thing, they, all of a sudden then it's like, you know, either you're too political or, you know, I don't care about you. I don't try to talk about my personal life, but it's like, guys, can I ask the guy one question about the Knicks? But Pakoda. So let's get into the fun stuff. Yeah. Pakoda, a name from the ex-Met, Bill Pakoda, baseball prospectus, projections, rankings. I have never seen the Mets grade out well in this for well over 10 years. Do you remember the Mets ever being grading out going into the season as well as they're projected to be a 95 win team, which I'm not sure I agree with. I also didn't agree with baseball prospectus when they said they were an 80 win team. Right. But there's usually a 5 to 6 game variance left or right, up, down, whatever.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts? So you look at, I don't know how deep you looked into it. Mm-hmm. They're a team that might score 900 runs. That's with the current lineup without any addition and assuming health, of course. I think they have a top five offense, even without Cano. Yeah. You know, Cano had a good year. People forget they lost a bat and they got Lindor, so they certainly made up for it. So what are your thoughts on the Mets now? The Mets as constituted a 95 win team. And second, what would you guys, what would Mets Fix like to see? Assuming we're just doing gravy moves, little tiny around the fringes, forget big moves. What would you guys like to see them round out the roster and do as we head into pitchers and catchers?
Yeah, no. And I actually went through in our newsletter at Metropolitan and looked at since 2008, no team has been overvalued by Pakoda more than the Mets.
Wow.
And they've missed them on average. Now there's been some swings. There's a couple of years they're 20 wins off. And then there's another a few years where they're only one win off. But on average, it was about 4 wins. So what I always say to people is if they're saying 95 wins, then even if you say Pakoda, this thing's stupid, like it's a bunch of nerds, they're not watching the games, like it means nothing. The point is they're gonna be within 5 to 10 wins. They've shown that over the years. So if they're telling you 95, even if you take out 10 wins, you're now at 85. You're right.
It's a good baseline. That's a wild card baseline that you should be able to get into the tournament with that, you know?
Right. So to me, that is a good sign because, and I think it's often, it speaks to the offense, the top of that rotation. And I think the area that most fans are probably the most concerned in is the bullpen. Someone like Edwin Diaz is going to have a great projection because his underlying numbers are very good. But, you know, as a fan, when you're watching the games you see him blow a game, you don't have faith and confidence in him, right? So I think that's usually where there's the biggest discrepancy. But, I think the number's high and other projection systems have the Mets a little bit lower. They have them more around like 88, 89.
But I can see that.
Yeah, I don't think there's some people I feel like I think it's like way high. It's like, you know, would it shock me if the Mets won 95 games? No, maybe not the way it is now. I think this is the key difference and leads into your follow-up question. I could see them going into the season where they literally signed Tuan Walker, Trevor Rosenthal, and let's say that's it. But then in season, the Mets are going to be the team that all the way up to the deadline, we're going to hear attached to stuff and they will go out and make a move. And if they have an injury, unlike in the past, they are going to, I mean, they just lost Lugo, right? But, you know, if they really have an issue, if Thor doesn't come back the way they think he will, or hope he will, I should say, I mean, they will make a move. So to me, I don't know if as the roster is now, it's 95 wins, even with adding these couple final pieces, but I think they're 85 and then they make a move in season. You know, maybe you could get there, but that to me is the key to remember. The roster's not done just because pitcher and catchers report this week. And then we all have like, okay, that's it. The offseason's done. We give our offseason grades. There's all the way until July, there are going to be potential for moves. And I think you'll see the Mets be active there.
So you got the Mets fixed. So the newsletter's Monday to Friday. Well done. It's a great service. You're kind of becoming a trendsetter because now I see other people trying to come out. Graphics are great. And it's not just aggregation. You give some interesting opinion analysis. Talk a little bit about your newsletter. I'm sure many of the people in the audience, because I've been talking about it, have signed up. But if they have it, they should. It's free of charge. What to expect from Mets Fix? What is the situation over there?
Yeah, no, and appreciate you promoting it out. And you can find it probably easiest just going to Twitter at Mets Fix, and then you can sign up there. But yeah, every weekday at 8 a.m., we send out the newsletter. And what you're going to get is along the top, a summary of the news. But then we try to make it where, you know, we've all seen kind of the link dumps. And really, to me, same thing with Nick's Film School when we set that up. It's we're fans first, but fans who hopefully have, a little more analysis than just like your WFAN caller, right? And the idea is like, I get a bunch of newsletters for everything else. Like I'll get a newsletter on business, on politics. And I just felt it was odd. There wasn't something about the Mets where it wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to have to click on this article. It's this is what happened. Here's some context to what it means. And then now here's a analysis on a topic. We'll pick a different topic each day and we'll go deeper in analysis and we'll try to mix, you know, I'm very conscious of being, I want to have sort of the new research and numbers because I want for some people to give them that, but not crazy. I don't want to go into, you know,
balance it out.
Exactly. I want it to have a balance. So I think people enjoy it. It's free. And like I said, it's Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. You'll get it. So at Mets Fix, go to the Twitter account and you can check it out and appreciate you definitely promoting it out.
So the Knicks, real quick, we've had a couple of false starts. You had the 2012-2013 season, the win now team after the collapse. You know, I really don't get mad about the first 10 years of post-playoff success because that was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
It's the kind of the last two restarts that are the aggravating one. 2014 and then 3-4 years later, you're doing it again. That's the death knell. That's how 10 years goes into 20 and then 30. And with Porzingis and everything, but do you think we're finally seeing the thaw out? Good coach. I guess they're going the Brody Van Wagenen route with the GM, but you know, who knows? Maybe it's a little bit different with Leon Rose. What are your quick feelings? I mean, are you feeling better over there? Are you Knicks Film School? Are they feeling as good over the Knicks Film School as they are over here at the fans that tune into my show and, of course, subscribe to Mets Fix?
Yeah, no, I think so. And I'll tie it to baseball. You know, basketball, NBA, it's different. I mean, think about it. The Mets just got Francisco Lindor. In the NBA, if you get an equivalent player like that, that is franchise changing because it's all about who has these big stars. We're seeing it with Brooklyn. So for the Knicks, they've been stuck where they can't get those big stars, but they also haven't had good just complementary pieces to attract a big star. And this year, we're finally seeing with the progression of some of their rookies and with new rookies like Emmanuel Quickley, where you combine that with good coaching, you're finally getting like a good product. And I think Knicks fans are always battling, do we want to tank for a draft pick or do we want to like, you know, try to be good and competitive? And most of the time, people rather have them tank because they don't want to get stuck in the middle where you don't get a good draft pick and you don't compete. But I think after this long run and seeing the fact that it's young players contributing to their better record, I think more fans are accepting now of saying, all right, I'm done with tanking. Let's just have our young guys get better and win games with them. And then we add real talent and maybe, you know, you're onto something.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about fans booing because, well, there will be fans soon. Soon, maybe that'll help out a little bit. Let's see. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Well, listen, JB, you've been great. I want to do this again. I can't say it enough. Very, very well done newsletter. You're pioneering. I mean that sincerely. You deserve a ton of credit for what you do. And it's not easy. Believe me, the graphics alone would take me all night to do. Yes, so I don't know how you do it. God bless your family over there. So anyway, be well. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Let's do this again, my friend. All righty?
All right. Thanks. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
And that's Jeff Ballone at Mets Fix, and away you go. So anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be back to wrap up and more right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, I'm going to make this quick as we wrap up here on the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You guys want to get out and enjoy Valentine's Day with your significant other. You don't want to be listening to the Talking Mets podcast. Nah, I'm joking on there. Hey, I want to thank Jeffrey Ballone, Jeff Ballone, JB, at MetsFix on Twitter. Again, like I told you, if you're not subscribed to the Metropolitan newsletter, get there now. Get to Twitter now. Go on MetsFix.com, at MetsFix on Twitter. Subscribe to the newsletter. You will not be disappointed. Monday to Friday, one a day, comes there at 8 o'clock in the morning. Just a way to get your coffee, start your day, and go out there and read some really good Mets content. And hopefully more to come from the Mets and a couple of smaller moves between when JB and I had our conversation earlier today and now. But, you know, again, I reiterate what I said in the open. There's reason to be concerned because of history of not only the executive in charge, Alderson, but also you guys all still have that Wilpon smell on you. It'll fade away. It will. But you got to just take a step back and realize that there's a lot at play here. This is very complicated. Winning now, building an organization, key players that are free agents coming up in the next year to 2 years. So measuring twice and cutting once is a good strategy because I don't think they missed out on anybody that potentially is not irreplaceable. Bauer is a guy that I would have been mad if they didn't try to make a move, and they did, and they lost. And you get beat, you get beat. So that's how I would leave it. But we'll see. Pitchers and catchers are here. Workouts are here. I think it was Jordan Yamamoto, new Mets pitcher acquired from the Marlins, tweeted out a picture of him driving up to Port St. Lucie this morning. And Jeff McNeil's talking about his golf game. And before you know it, the Riders will be down in Port St. Lucie. I think they're going to go down there physically, even though everything will be on Zoom. And we'll be talking baseball. We'll be talking baseball and results. 162-game season. Still some silly rules, but I think we're past pandemic baseball and pandemic talk, and I don't want to hear about health and safety protocols. They're there. Let's just play ball. Let's move forward. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear about 162-game season and maybe fans in the stands. We see that now with Cuomo lifting the restrictions for the Knicks and the Nets and arenas. We'll see what happens with baseball in April, and hopefully things continue to go in the right direction. All right, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of the week. If you got a couple of minutes, leave me a review on Apple iTunes. Would greatly appreciate it. Till next time, take care, everybody. Yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.